You are listening to a sermon preached at the First Christian Church of St. Ignatius in St. Ignatius, Montana. For more information, you can visit us at www.firstchristiansti.org.
So, here we go. So, let's start this way. Last week, we heard an amazing message from Alan, right? And I mean, for those of you that were here, if you missed it, I'm sorry, because it was amazing. I went into that service, well, actually went into that week ahead of time thinking that that was my Sunday. And for whatever reason, Bob had given me the schedule, but for whatever reason, I had locked it into my brain until about Thursday when my wife finally convinced me that it wasn't my Sunday. So then Alan came up here and gave that message, and I went, man, I really wish it would have been my Sunday, because then I wouldn't have had to follow him. But here I am anyways. So here's the deal. I have usually in my head two or three different messages that I want to give that I'm kind of playing with all the time, ready to give. I had chapel Monday and Wednesday this week, and so I gave one of those messages on Monday for chapel for the kids at school. And then I gave the other one on Wednesday. And so I spent the last part of the week going, okay, so how do I expand on those? How do I give those messages again for Sunday? And then I went, yeah, no, they've already heard it from me. At least the younger kids in here and some of the teachers in here have already heard it from me. Eventually it gets to the point where they just do something different. So good news, I'm going to do something different. We need to take a vote here real quick, though, because the thing I came to was I want to do the Sermon on the Mount. I've got some things I want to share about the Sermon on the Mount, but it's long. So we got to take a vote real quick. You want me to just do the whole thing, or you want me to break it into a couple parts, and next time I'll do the other half, because we could be here all day. People, the whole thing. People want to eat. Okay, so we'll just get started. Let's do that. Let's start with the story. Friday, my wife and I took the kids to town. They had the day off school. We went to town, and we had some things we were going to do. We were going to make it a little bit of a fun day, but we had some shopping we had to do too. And so we went into one of the stores to go shopping. And the store has a toy section. And if you have small children, you know that even if you're not going to let them get anything, you've got to at least take them through the toy section, because otherwise all you hear is, I want to go to the toy section, right? So we went through the toy section, and Noah immediately picks out what he wants, okay? And it's a box that stands as tall as he does with this Spider-Man contraption thing in it. He called it the Spider-Man castle. That's what he kept calling it, okay? And he has decided that's what he wants. And Dad, of course, quickly, you know, he knows that Noah's got a little bit of money saved up from birthdays and things like that. So Dad quickly, Mom quickly, sorry, I found out after the fact. Mom quickly looks at the price tag and goes, yeah, you're not going to be able to afford that. So, but he's like, but Mom, I really want. She said, well, I tell you what, we'll look and see what you have. So she goes, she gets his money, we're looking at it. Oh, you can afford that. Right? So Noah gets this toy, this castle, this big, huge castle. He has got what he was looking for. He has got what he is searching for. He has received what he was after. He has it. Now, chapter 5 of Matthew is where we're going to start. Chapter 5, I kind of hinted at that when I said Sermon on the Mount. If you didn't know that, that's chapter 5. Now, when he saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. When Jesus starts his sermon on the mount, he goes through these lists of things, and he lists this group of people and what they have, what they have received, what they get, what's coming to them because of who they are. They have it, right? All this leading up to eventually he's going to die on the cross and we will have eternal life because of him. But he goes through the list of things they have and will receive. Noah on that day, I took it down off the top shelf because he couldn't reach it, and he helped me push the cart because it was too much for me to handle. And we got up to the front, and he put it up on the counter. And in all his joy, he paid the lady for it, and it was his, and he had it. But was having it enough? I mean, he had it. He had received it. We spent the rest of the day in Missoula that day, and we didn't get home until after 9 o'clock. Now, my kids start getting ready for bed at 7:30. They're in bed, lights out at 8 o'clock, okay? Do they go to sleep? No, but that's not the point. The point is, well after 9 is well past his bedtime. And so on that drive home, he started to doze. He started to sleep. He started to be groggy-eyed. And when I took him out of the car to take him inside, the first thing he had to say was, "Dad, when I wake up in the morning, can we put the Spider-Man castle together?" He had it. Now we had to do something with it. We're going to keep going. Verse 13. "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." It's not just enough to have it. You have to do something with it. You have to step forward and be the light that stands out. You have to do things that bring praise to our Heavenly Father. It wasn't just good enough for Noah to have this toy in a box that he could look at. He needed to be able to do something with it. So the next morning, Noah wakes up, and the first interaction Noah and I have is, "Can we put that together now?" "Well, no, I'm still trying to get the crusty stuff out of my eyeballs. We're not putting anything together yet." But I got a little bit of a reprieve. Uncle Rick called, and he had some errands to run, and he wanted to know if he could take Noah along. So I threw that kind of at Noah as bait. "Noah, you want to go with Uncle Rick?" "Yeah, I'd love to go with Uncle Rick," and he's gone. Plenty of time to get the crusties out of my eyes. But while he was gone, I figured now's my chance to put this thing together. Now's my chance to take this thing out of the box and put it together. Because if I do it now, he won't be there trying to touch everything and in the middle of everything, right? It's time to unpack it. And when I unpack it, there's package after package after package of stuff. They used all the letters in the alphabet to letter things, and then just started to double up the letters because they still had more stuff. And when they got tired of that, they threw some numbers in too. It was like algebra all over again. So I'm unpacking this, right? And now I've got to figure out what to do with it. So the first thing we have to do is unpack it. Verse 17, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law of the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter nor the least stroke of a pen will be by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Anyone who breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. We have to unpack it. This thing that we have, this thing that we receive, we have to get it out of the box and understand exactly what it means and what we're trying to do with it. We have to see all of the parts. And Jesus says to them, I didn't come to abolish the law. That's not the plan. But I am going to help you understand it. I am going to help you understand what your responsibility to it is. So that you don't stumble and that you don't take anyone with you. So as I'm sitting there on the living room floor with all these pieces scattered out all around me, my initial reaction is, I think I can do this. And then I realize, with pictures. So I dig out the instructions. And much to my excitement, it really was just pictures. They didn't give you like written instructions. It was just pictures right up my alley. So I've got this sheet full of pictures to follow to start putting things together. Stay with me here. I'm going to jump around a little bit. Don't get lost. I'm not crazy. I know what I'm doing. I promise. I started looking at the pictures and putting things together. Matthew 21, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. You've heard, this is 27, you've heard that it was said, do not commit adultery. 31, it has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. 33, again you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not break your oath, but keep the oaths you have made to the Lord. You have heard, 38, heard that it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. 43, you have heard that it was said, I love your neighbor, or excuse me, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemies. I started looking at the pictures and putting this thing together. And I'm slapping things together pretty fast. It's going pretty smooth. Life is working great. By this time, I've gathered myself an audience. Johanna and Ariana are on the couch above me looking down like this. What's happening? What's he creating? What's he doing? I was following the instructions, just like I just read there. Don't murder. Right? Just like I read there. Keep your oaths. Right? I was following the instructions. Pretty soon, this little voice is from behind me. Johanna says, Dad, there's supposed to be a sticker on there. What stickers? I didn't sign up for stickers. I'm snapping stuff together. So now I start looking a little closer at the pictures I've got, and I skip the page. You know, the page that tells you all the different parts you're supposed to have? The one with all the letters on it, I was talking about it. I just glanced at it real quick. Yeah, it looks like enough stuff to me, right? So I just started going. I didn't look at that picture because down at the bottom of that picture, it shows little arrows from this sticker going here and this sticker going there for a reason, you see? Because now that I've got some stuff snapped together, I've realized that it's going to be a whole lot harder to get that sticker underneath and in there than it would have been if I'd have done it before I started. When we're reading the instructions, we have to, or looking at the pictures, we have to look closer. Look closer. Don't just take a casual glance. Don't just peek quickly and move forward. Look closer. So let's look closer. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. Looking closer. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to the judgment. Wait a minute. I read the instructions. I looked at the instructions. It said, don't murder. Or I'd be judged for that. Now you're telling me I have to look further. I have to understand that my action, my anger, the things that go on in here that maybe don't even come out, I'm responsible for those too? Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother. Then come and offer your gift. So wait, for me to be right in that relationship and that thing that I have here, I have to be right here before I can be right here? It all affects everything? Wait, let's go back. When I just looked at the picture, it was easier when I just looked at the picture. It was easier when all I had to do was remember the don't murder thing. But to get the picture right, to get the whole thing built like it's supposed to be, I got to follow all the instructions. I got to pay attention to all the pictures. I got to put all the pieces in place. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still with him on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. I tell you the truth, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. Make amends quickly. I think Jesus there was trying to get them to understand something. It's about that right relationship, isn't it? We need to make that amends quickly with those here and with God here, because otherwise, who's left to pay the bill? And we know, because we've read the rest of the book, that the only one capable of paying the bill is Jesus Christ. We don't want to be left there trying to pay every penny on our own. Keep looking at the instructions. You have heard that it was said, do not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Sorry, kids from chapel, you've heard some of this already, but you're going to hear it again. I look on her with my eyes and I have already committed adultery. Now, I didn't say anything. I didn't touch. I didn't move. I didn't. You mean I'm responsible for what goes on in here too? Not just what comes out? If it's going to be built correctly, the pieces have to be in place. He goes on from that. He says, if your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. I asked the kids this on Wednesday. So does he really mean he wants you to just reach in there and tear that eye out? Is that what he's talking about? Does he really want you to cut your hand off? Is that what he's talking about? What he's saying is this. It's going to hurt. Getting right, getting the pieces in place, turning away from your sinful nature and the things that you've always done, it's going to hurt. It's going to feel like gouging your eye out. It's going to feel like chopping your hand off. It's going to feel like pain and punishment for a little bit while you get yourself right with me. But it's better. It's better to go through that than to remain in your sinful nature. It's better to go through that and remove that eye, to remove that hand, to remove that nature from yourself through me, than to remain in it. You got to look past just the simple things. I didn't touch. I didn't say anything. I didn't walk over there. I'm okay. Yeah. No, you're not. Verse 31, it has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. Whew. By this time, I can see him sitting there on the mountainside listening to Jesus. And when he says, but I say, you know there's got to be this big intake of breath. Here we go again. Right? Here we go again. I got to take it beyond what I just initially see. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for marital unfaithfulness, causes her to become an adulteress. And anyone who marries the divorced woman commits adultery. He puts it out there that you don't just get to write the piece of paper and hand it and walk away and everything's fine. That's not how it was meant to work. It's not an excuse. It's not a pass. And for them, that's a really hard thing to swallow because they've been operating this way for a really, really long time. Doesn't sound much different than today, really. Again, you've heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not break your oath. That's funny, coming right after he talks about divorce. But keep the oaths you have made to the Lord. But I tell you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, and do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. Simply let your yes be yes, and your no, no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. Don't need you to swear an oath to me, he says. Let your yes be yes and your no, no. You don't have any standing to swear on. It's not yours to swear on. It's an empty oath. It's an empty promise that way. There's nothing to back it up. You control none of it. So it hurts you in no way to say that. They become empty words. Stand on what you have, which is your word. Yes is yes, no is no. Don't make exceptions, don't make excuses, don't add anything to it. Just go with it. Yes, I'll do that. No, I won't do that. Yes or no. You got to get the whole picture. You got to get all the pieces in place or it isn't going to work right. It isn't going to be right. You have heard that it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. Everybody can get behind that one. Sweet. But I tell you, there it is again. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, to turn to him the other also. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. in all of this that Christ's saying, what is he trying them to get them to understand? Who are they supposed to represent? Their best interest, right? That's what they're after? No, it has absolutely nothing to do with their best interest. It has to do with his. The thing that's being built by putting all the following all the pictures isn't us. It's our reflection of him. So he says, this whole eye for an eye thing, tooth for a tooth, that's not really how I operate. And so therefore, that can't be how you operate. What I'm telling you is, you turn the other cheek. We kind of had this kind of conversation upstairs a little bit in my Sunday school class. I wasn't leading, so I don't have to take credit for any of it tying together. Somebody said, you're going to say turn the other cheek, but they'll hit you in the other cheek. Maybe. Maybe they will. But maybe they won't. Maybe they'll see something there that they didn't recognize before. When you walk with them more than a mile and you continue that journey with them, you get to continue to be his reflection for them. Because what we're building here isn't ourselves. We're building a reflection of him. You've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Again, it's an easy one to get behind, isn't it? But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than the others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. We're supposed to stand out. We're going to go back to the beginning when he talks about salt and light. We're going to go back to the beginning when he talks about a city on a hill and not hiding the lamp. We're supposed to stand out. If our actions only match what everybody else is doing in the world, we're no different. And that's not what he's after. He's after something that stands bright and tall, where he's after something that draws attention, not to us, but to him. He's after what we received in the beginning. I could keep going, but I'll stop there. We'll pick up there later. Let me finish my story with Noah real quick. Rick got back with Noah. And he opened the door, and Noah came in, and Rick's talking to us, and we're all kind of talking a little bit, and something catches Noah's eye. Something big. Something exciting. Something kind of shiny. And I can't do it right. I couldn't possibly do it justice. But there's this squeal followed by the word yes, probably a dozen times, as my son bolted from one side of the house to the other to what he had purchased, to what he had received. And remember, I said it was a box about the same height as him, right? Now it's all unpackaged. I've followed the instructions. I've worked hard to make sure I matched the pictures that were there. I've gone back and went past just my initial looking, and I've done the stickers too. And now it stands about a foot, maybe a foot and a half taller than Noah. To play with the stuff on top, he's got to do this. Life is great. It reflects not just what he thought he was going to get, but so much more. And that's what we need to come to understand. We start seeking God. We start hearing things that make us think about it. We start desiring what we think He has for us, and we pursue that. What we need to come to understand is that when we unpack it, when we dive into the instructions, when we look closer, there is so much more there than we ever expected. So much more there than we ever deserve. I'm stopping halfway, not even halfway through the Sermon on the Mount. There's a lot more to unpack. Noah's Spider-Man castle is all built. Over 2 years ago, my wife and I came across some fairly beat up, fairly older, fairly used little kid four-wheelers. We picked them up cheap, I mean cheap, from the thrift store. 6 months or so later, we bought the batteries and the wiring that went in them. It's all still sitting there. None of the instructions have been followed. None of it's been put together. None of it's been unpacked. And it's still just imagining what could be. No realization of what we were after. No receiving so much more. If you haven't made a decision in your life for Christ and what He has for you, you haven't even begun to unpack. You haven't even begun to make a choice. If you're hearing things that are stirring those feelings inside of you, if you're hearing things that are making you question and making you want to seek more, if you've heard enough that you're ready to make a decision, now's the time. Now's the time. If you've already made that decision, what haven't you started to dive into and unpack yet? Because just because we finished the Spider-Man castle doesn't mean there's not more to work on.